up, Greg? Merry Christmas.
There he is, Mr. Craig. Did you call him Greg?
Yes, I did.
I thought you did.
Sup, Craig? Merry Christmas.
We're a few months out from Christmas. I just want to point that out. Thank goodness.
I'm tired.
About 2 weeks, though, a little more than 2 weeks, going to begin. It's going to be Christmas season. It's going to be nothing but Christmas decorations, Christmas music, and everybody trying to avoid getting whammed.
And everyone going to DM's Guild and buying my Christmas one-shot, Everyone's Been Naughty, and playing it with all their D&D friends and family, right?
Yep. Right. Yep, do it. Right. Yeah, and if anybody wants to get me Christmas gifts, I like dice and books, and honestly, I'm easy. Send me magic cards.
I'm actually exhausted. I went to a place today called Bee City.
I saw that.
Can you guess what they have at Bee City?
Not bees.
Everything but bees.
I guessed right. I saw the pictures and the videos of like the emus and all the other farm animals, but I was looking for beehive pictures and saw none.
So yeah, they have camels, snow leopards, Siberian tigers, every brand of monkey ever to exist, all the turtles.
Do they have orangutans?
No.
Damn, I've always wanted to hang out with an orangutan.
But like the bee part is like there's like this little beehive cluster they have next to the tiger tank, and they're all painted to look like little office buildings and whatnot. But like there are no bees flying around. They're all huddled away because it was like 50 degrees out.
Yeah, it's cold.
They're all huddled away.
Did they sell honey?
They did sell honey from the beehives. I bought a bunch.
Okay, good. As long as they sold honey and bee memorabilia, that is acceptable. Did they happen to have any mask of, what's his name? Nicolas Cage, by chance? No. All right, that's a shame. The bees!
They did have an emu who were like, I held out the cup of seeds, and he just went, rah, and like shoved his entire face into the cup and just started just destroying the seeds. There's a video of my wife like holding, doing the same thing with the cup, but he was very like, he had already finished most of the cup, so he wasn't as aggressive with her.
Yeah, I saw the one with your wife holding it. That was cute.
It did trigger me going, I need to write a monster for this. I need to write a giant emu who just walks, like, just runs through the Feywild forests and just engulfs people and just keeps on running.
I like that plan. Yeah, make that part of your campaign. Just a 20-foot-tall emu that chucks along and snacks on people.
I did make up a bunch of monsters for the Owl campaign, and I wanted to run them by you.
All right.
Because it's already happened.
I've already seen the ones that your daughter made, so I don't think yours can be nearly as good unless they're using that.
No, these are definitely not as good. It's less monsters and more scenarios. So, I'm running the Owl campaign, and everyone should be watching at twitch.tv/GrumpyDungeonMasters every Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are getting close to the end of the campaign. You don't want to miss the cool stuff that's going to happen. But, shameless plug.
I've heard the planned ending. It's going to be good.
But, I killed another player last night.
What are you up to? Are you keeping count in this one like you did Icewind Dale?
Seven.
Man, you have an ability to kill players. To kill characters. You really have an ability for that. I don't kill nearly as many as you do.
So, one of the newer players was playing a turtle cleric, and the turtle cleric died to that angler troll that I had. So he wrote up a drunken master monk rabbit folk. Okay.
Oh no.
And the rabbit was just always drunk, and he was kind of playing and was drunk and very loud and belligerent. And so all he would do is just walk up to a door and kick it open. And we're like, hey, what's over here? Kind of thing. Yep. I had not planned on this happening, but this is the scenario that happens. He knocked on the door loudly. There was no response. They heard some giggling before. Then he knocked. The giggling stopped. He kicked in the door. Okay? Initiative started.
I was going to say, you kick in a door after some giggling. So it's one of two things. Either it is haunted by, you know, tiny child ghost, which in case of that, you're probably dead. Or two, he had accidentally walked into a hot spring scene from an anime, in which case you're probably still dead.
So he kicked in the door, and on the other side of the door was basically the throne room of Envisor, the spectator.
Oh, they found him.
So Envisor basically has these two fairies that sit on either side of him and, like, you know, talk sweetly to him, feed him things, you know, like any good warlord has, you know. They're just there. And there were two red cap guards that are always in his room. And then there's a taxidermied stuffed owlbear at the corner near the door.
Right.
So he kicks in the door. The fairies, being fairies, pixies really, go first. The first one casts Entangle on the group outside the door. So it's like just starts at the door and moves all the way back. And everybody failed the strength save. So everybody is restrained. Okay?
Yep.
Then it's the rabbit's turn. He can't do anything. Okay? He's restrained. He tries to break out. Fails. Can't move. No bonus action. Then all of a sudden the taxidermy owlbear moves. Walks over there and hits him with his claw. And it hits. And then all of a sudden he's now adhered to the owlbear via some weird pseudopod. But the owlbear statue is still there. The pseudopod is like connected to the owlbear. It hits him again. And now he's doubly grappled by this weird pseudopod and adhered to it with the other claw. And then he just goes ahead and this owlbear bites him. And when the owlbear bites him, I explained that like it starts at the beak, but then the mouth line extends all the way down into the chest of the owlbear. And this massive mouth just full of teeth appear and bite down on Harris. And I crit.
Of course you crit. Anything that dies to that, you should immediately then say, you got mimicked. Because that's what happened. He got mimicked.
And then it pulled him, like, out of the door frame, off to the side. It's still shaped like an owlbear. The next pixie cast a phantasmal illusion?
Phantasmal killer?
No. Maybe. It just creates an illusion that they want.
Probably phantasmal force.
Yeah. So she creates.
I don't even know if phantasmal killer is still in the game or not.
She creates the illusion of basically a flowing waterfall of acid in just taking up the whole door frame. Okay. And if you can see it, you can smell it. You can almost like feel the acid burning away, but it's not pulling in the water. It's not pulling down below. So the two red caps prepare an action. If anyone comes through the door and the players try to break out of being restrained and they're not. And next round goes all the way back around. The pixies are kind of doing their thing, you know, hiding and going invisible and shit. And there's nothing else I can really do with this taxidermied owlbear and Harris the Haragon without me just going, I'm just not going to play this creature correctly. You know?
Yeah.
So
I just want to say he named his guy Harris the Haragon. No, he got what he deserved.
So, the taxidermy owlbear went through, crushed him, critical hit, two death save failures, and I just went ahead and just did the bite. And he failed. Another critical hit, two more failures, his character's dead, eaten by the giant taxidermy owlbear with the massive mouth. And you kind of guessed it already, it is a mimic. It's a mimic that wants to always just keep the form of a taxidermied owlbear for whatever reason.
Hey, whatever. I mean, we have a backpack mimic, remember?
Yeah, we do. So Harris died. He rolled up a new character. He rolled up a fairy cleric of the Grave Domain. And I was kind of working on the stream and everything going on and getting people sorted and stuff. So I really wasn't paying attention to what he made. And so he kind of broke the rule of no clerics.
Oh, yeah.
Allowed unless it's from the material plane. So I've been thinking anyways about changing the beginning part of the Owlbear campaign anyways, and just making it its own domain, because that's just how D&D wants things to be.
Well, so like they did it that way, so you can just do what you want.
Yeah.
It doesn't it doesn't necessarily make for consistency or good lore. But it does ease things for the DMs to make whatever the hell they want and still run in Forgotten Realms.
Yeah. So I don't have to change anything. It can still be that their domain popped into existence in the material plane and seems to be anchored there, you know, much like, you know, the Feywild book with the circus, you know, coming around every once every 8 years. Or you can still put it anywhere in the Feywild that you want. I'll have to change a few of the backstory elements, because I had the town have good relationship with other people in the actual Feywild. But I can just say that they just always kind of just pop around. People just come and visit theirs because they have a huge forest and everyone likes it there. You know?
Backtracking very, very quickly. I want to bitch more about Harris the Haragon. Like, seriously. That's like having a goblin character named Gobbo the Goblin.
That's a great name for a goblin.
A kobold named Kobe the Kobold. Like it's.
I'm using that.
Humie the Human. You know, it's just the most generic thing I've heard. Harris the Haragon.
I like it. I'm gonna use Kobe the Kobold now.
Be the Kobold. Yep.
I don't know how I'm gonna bring in the whole. I use a lot of Fomorian lore in my setting. So I'm not sure how I'm going to tie that in if it just becomes its own domain. But I'll figure something out. Maybe I'll actually read through the Feywild packet and see what it actually says.
I mean, you did pick it up. You spent the extra $8 or whatever on it, so you might as well read it.
Yeah, might as well read it.
Yeah,
I still haven't got my Minx and Boo book, by the way. Everyone else that I know that ordered it after I did got their book, and I still haven't.
I know, right? I was even joking that I got mine before you, and I never ordered it.
So the other monsters that I did is because of reasons in the campaign that I really can't discuss right now. There's a lot of undead zombies and ghouls, and they're basically based off of the race that lived in that castle. So they're all large. They're not medium size. So they're all large. So all the ghouls and zombies had more hit points, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I made them resistant to necrotic for a reason, but I didn't like that, so I'm taking that back. Then had a bunch of skeletal miners that attacked them. A skeletal swarm that attacked them. And they were doing pretty good. They were going through a lot of really hard encounters, and they were down a player, and a brand new player. But then I finally introduced like the things that are there in this castle. And so one guy casts sunlight, the new cleric, he casts sunlight, and because he couldn't see anything, but everyone else could see in the dark. it was weird that he cast a sunlight spell, but you know, bright light, 120 foot or 100.
The duration on that, though, I don't think it's very long. Is it really?
1 hour. Mm-hmm.
Does it move with you, or it's just one location?
You can put it in one location or an object that you're holding.
Okay. That works then.
So he cast sunlight, lit up the mine, and it went far down the mine. And I took that into account with the monster, and the monster that was in the mine started waking up. But it wasn't like going after them. It was now here and ready. They couldn't get the surprise round on it that I had initially planned. Then my wife used Thunderwave.
Oh, okay. You meant daylight. That's
daylight, yes. It creates sunlight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then my wife uses Thunderwave, and you know that echoes through the mine, just loud boom. So the second she did that, I start acting out this monster. It's like, Queen, are you there, my queen? And they're like, oh shit, we got to finish this because something's coming. So they finished killing off the skeletons.
You fool of a took.
All the while this thing is coming down the mine. She's like, Queen, are you there? Majesty, I'm coming. Don't leave me. And they finally are able to see it. And it's a large elf where half her face has basically started to become corrupted. Also, this elf, the skin and a lot of her flesh has rotted away. So it's three things kind of making this character up. It's a large elf. It's undead. Most of its skin is rotted away except for the corrupted bits, which houses a glowing eye. And there's still some more lore to uncover, which I won't kind of cover here yet, but that's what they saw. And so then basically they were like, oh shit, I experienced this once with that glowing eye. You know, don't look at it. And then everyone proceeded to look at it.
Of course.
I based the monster stats off of the Bodok.
Yep, I know the Bodok. I like that guy.
Yeah. So one of the things that it's weak to is sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
It loses 5 hit points every time it just starts its turn in sunlight. If it wasn't for that cleric just randomly casting daylight and creating sunlight in that cave, they would have TPK'd. It pretty much burned half of its hit points away walking towards them.
Huh.
When the thing actually got close enough to actually engage the players, it was using its withering eye gaze on them. Nobody was averting their gaze to not look at the eye. People were starting within 30 feet of the monster, so the death gaze would trigger.
Yeah.
And the new cleric, the guy who had just died and rolled a brand new character, failed the death eye save by 5 or more. And when that happens, your hit points are immediately set to 0.
Got it. So it basically utilizes the same saving throw as turning to stone.
Yeah. So the thing that happened, the thing I kind of want to discuss and just throw past you as a DM, the other effect that this creature had as the Bodok is Aura of Annihilation. Any creature that ends their turn within 30 feet of this creature takes 5 necrotic damage. Technically, that also includes people bleeding out on the ground.
That's exactly who it includes. That's what it's designed for.
Maybe.
Definitely.
I definitely, it definitely is designed for that. But I, as a player, I hate that. It would make me mad to die to that.
It's not like, if you lose your hit points and you're already at 0 or negatives or whatever, you're just losing more hit points. It's honestly, that's sort of a non-effect because you're not going to take a critical from that because you only get critical from attacks.
But you do take a death failure.
No, you take a death failure from attacks, not from damage. From just base damage.
Okay, no. You're incorrect with this. What happens is when somebody attacks you, okay, while you're bleeding out, and they hit, that attack is a critical hit.
Yes.
And because it is a critical hit, you take 2 death failures. Now, however, if you take other damage, like by a fireball spell, or any other source of damage that was not an attack, you just take a single death failure. So the Aura of Annihilation, them ending their turn because they're dead next to this thing, they take the 5 damage and they lose 1 death save.
I'm trying to look it up right now.
I've looked it up quite a bit.
Well, I'm looking it up because I don't think that sounds right.
It is. But I don't like that. I don't like if I had cast Fireball and they were caught in the Fireball. Yeah, take that extra death save. There was an actual action there that triggered that death save to occur. But just being in an aura that just gives you a failure, you know, it just feels bad. It feels bad. So I didn't make them take any of the death failures from the aura, and they still barely succeeded. The mage was 0 and 2. He had failed twice. He was also in the aura for like 3 turns, so he would have definitely been dead.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know what that teaches your players? Fucking heal people who are at 0.
Well, they can't because the cleric, the brand new cleric, was at 0 because he failed the death save.
You can make a fucking medicine check to stop that.
In this particular scenario, they all kind of like were like saw the monster coming down one side of the mine, and there was like a break, so they all started running around to the other side. So before the last guy could basically make his move to run around, she came all the way down and basically just knocked him out.
Yeah, well, as soon as he's out on their turn, on the monster's turn, then all the other players get a turn. And yeah. On their turns, one of them could make a medicine check, one of them could pour a potion down his throat. There's a bunch of things they could do to get that character back up. If he lays on the ground for 3 rounds, or however long, that's on them.
So I didn't have the aura trigger a death failure, but they still came close to dying.
I absolutely would have had him making those death fail. Like, yeah, he would have had to make his standard death saves, and he would take damage, therefore taking another failure.
Yeah,
like I all, you know, it, fireballs, like as you said, it causes that to happen. So yeah, this would too.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm fine with the fireball causing it to happen. It just feels bad to me that this aura also did it too.
The only thing that I don't think of an aura or something just a sustained damage as a problem for in that scenario. The one that would get me, and this is one I don't do this as a DM, is when somebody goes down and then other monsters run over and keep attacking them. Because that's a feel bad thing. That's the DM actually trying to kill you.
I feel like it's in the same boat for me. You know, oh, you're down. Well, you also take the damage. Aha, ha ha ha. That's 2 failures.
Yeah, but it's like, over turns. If the monster scenario is not the same, because if you're fighting 5 monsters and one of them drops you and the other 3 come over and all attack you, you're just dead.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not a round of people having a chance to get you back at a standing or, you know, stable position. That's just, you're dead, nothing you can do about it.
I did do that once to a player, but that was the story of the kobolds in the castle, where basically a player dropped, and while they were running from kobolds, the players were in the other room, so the kobolds closed the door and then locked it.
I mean, at that point, you're dead anyway.
And they turn around and basically just start shanking the guy on the ground. Like, I felt terrible, but I was like, this is on key.
Yeah, I mean, they got Caesared by a bunch of kobolds. That's what happens.
Yeah. It also depends on the monster I'm playing. Like, if you're playing an animal and you go down, I can see the animal taking another swipe at you if it was very aggressive, you know? But once you stop moving and you're playing dead, that's the whole purpose of playing dead. You know, it's just going to go, he's dead. I can leave now.
I will never begrudge another DM for doing it, because it's a thing that can happen. I personally just try not to ever do it.
I have a bunch of red caps going on right now. And by the way, I'm very proud of my wife. I do want to give her a shout out here. She's still a very new D&D player. So now she's not on like 2 years now, 3 years, 2.5.
Yeah.
Something. She, in a long rest, swapped some of her spells. She took away some, and she basically added in cure wounds and heat metal. Because we didn't have a healer. The ranger had pickups, so she wanted to be double pickups. Good thought. And then she picked up heat metal.
Or the shoes.
Because we've been fighting red caps, and she was like, if I see another red cap, I'm going to set his shoes on fire.
Yep.
And by God, when she saw that next red cap, she's like, oh, heat metal, heat metal.
Clever. I probably wouldn't have thought of that, but as soon as you said it with red caps, I was like, oh yeah, you light the shoes up.
Yep. With red caps, like, they're very vicious.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be so concerned about killing a dead body as they are taking their caps off and stuffing it in their red cap wounds, you know?
Yeah.
So I've had them do that, where basically they downed a player and then they just red cap meleeed them and then just started shoving their hats into like the wounds they just created to, you know, fill up their hats again. So that's a cute way around like them just like offing a character while they're down. Goblins, oddly enough, are like the one like evil race that would just stab you and just keep stabbing you, you know, afterwards. So like if you do that as a DM, it's almost appropriate to basically like have the player fall, and then three or so goblins jump on them, stab them to death, but then do it for like a whole nother round too, because that's more inclined to what a crazy chaotic goblin would do.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're just going to keep stabbing and stabbing and stabbing until it's just red paste.
I mean, realistically, if you're in combat fighting for your life and you put somebody down, you're going to make sure they're not getting back up.
Yeah. Realistically, if you're fighting a goblin, what are you on?
Drugs.
I would like some.
You know what I'm saying? Whether it's goblins or humans or things that are real, you know, in the middle of war, if you put somebody down and they're still sort of rolling around, you're going to make sure they don't get back up if at all possible.
Yep. So overall, it was a very interesting session. Like I said, we were down a player, but I tried to adjust encounters more appropriately so they wouldn't, you know, mess up.
Mm-hmm.
They did skip two encounters. There was an encounter I had with like a little ghost girl that basically lures them in, and then like,
see?
Bam, I'm a ghost.
See, I told you. That's exactly what I was talking about earlier. You hear giggling on the other side of a door. It's fucking ghost kid. Stay away.
It was sobbing, though. It was crying.
That counts, too. Or if you see a ball bouncing down a hallway, you know, anything like that, no. Ghost child.
The other room, which I don't think they're going to go back and actually mess with, or they may, is a room that basically has perpetual dim light magically installed into the room. And there's a monster They develop film in there, yeah. There's a monster in there that just happens to have a 15-foot reach and an engulf mechanic. And there's lots of boxes. And they can use, if they're in dim light, they can use a bonus action to hide, like, at advantage, and they have, like, plus 15 to stealth. So essentially, they just blend into the darkness. There's no way to see them. The cleric, being a cleric of the Grave Domain, went over to Harris the Haragon, raised him from the dead, created an undead minion out of Harris, and had that undead minion kick in the door. And the second...
So the new character of the player who played Haragon animated his last character.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So he kicks in the door with this monster, and the monster immediately like launches out his tongue, wraps it around Haragon the zombie, Harris the zombie Haragon, and pulls him in and eats him in one shot. Because zombies have like, you know, 20 hit points, and this thing did like 30 from the get-go, and then the bite. So it was gone.
Well, that is a fitting end for such a terrible named character.
And the best part is, too, is that they just closed the door and went, yeah, we're not going there. We'll go back the other way. So I'm really proud of the group and doing what it is. I'm really proud of my wife with Heat Metal. I'm glad that they just happened to have daylight out and didn't get TPK'd by this Bodok.
As soon as you said you were talking about undead, and then you mentioned the daylight spell, and immediately my brain was like, aren't most undead incredibly fucking weak to that? And I had to go and look it up in fifth edition, and apparently that is not a thing anymore. Earlier editions, there were several undead that would immediately become comatose when, you know, confronted by daylight.
And that's something that I really dislike about fifth edition from having played it for so much now. Mm-hmm. The flavor of the monsters just doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't. They are very bland.
They are very, very bland. That's why I'm saying, like, if they do come out with a 5.5, I just want, like, the non-bland version of D&D. You know?
But they're taking it into an even more bland direction.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
That's the reason me and, you know, my players have been discussing getting out of it. Just because of that, there's not going to be much that we're looking forward to going forward.
Honestly, the monsters in 4th edition were the best that I've used so far from just D&D.
Well, you've only played 4th and 5th, so...
Well, all the RPGs that I've been in. The thing I liked about the monsters in 4th is they all had, like, a family trait, so to speak. Like, the Minotaur. When the Minotaur killed an opponent and then ate their heart, they gained some of the monster's traits that they just had. All the Duergar had that flaming quill.
Stupid.
Kobolds had pack tactics. All the goblins had shift. Some of that stuff came over.
Yeah, some of it.
But like all the undead had all their like standard undead block, you know. And
I mean, the undead in this have the stand. A lot of it has just come over as immunities and resistances.
Yeah.
But there's nothing. There's very little beyond that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. If I ever get a chance to create my homebrew campaign world, there will be a lot of that. I like that flavor a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there are things I like about 5e as far as the monsters go. It is, you know, fairly simplistic and all, which makes it easy to run. But it doesn't really add to the creativity of things.
No.
Everything is alike. You know, it's like we're only listening to Nickelback nowadays.
Well, I mean, yeah. No. Look at this photograph.
No. Anyway, moving on. Adventure League starts this week. I didn't know it ever stopped. But...
Well, yeah, I stopped it because I was the only person running it in Charleston, South Carolina.
Okay, so it didn't stop. It's just that there was no DMs for it.
Well, pandemic.
Well, okay, that's a fair point.
So, we're kicking it back off. I have two DMs that are going to help me out run games this time.
All right.
So, I'm looking forward to it.
What days are you running?
Just Wednesday right now.
Okay.
There's been some call to have Saturday as well. But, you know, that's why I want multiple DMs so we can have more people running other games. I went through and I kind of read all the adventures that they had. And I just took a quick look at all of them, and I was trying to figure out which one that I would want to run. And I settled down on the one that basically the cover art is the White Rabbit and the Cheshire Cat. But the rabbit has, like, this smock on that has all these, like, different, like, artificer tools on it. And the Cheshire Cat on the mushroom is a displacer beast.
Appropriate. I've actually seen pictures of a... displacer beast Cheshire Cat before. I don't know where I saw it, just a piece of art probably online, but kind of fits.
But just that was the reason I chose it and read through it, and I was like, oh, this is cute. And I went back and looked at the author, and the author of it is the same lady that wrote all the Nerd Adventures.
Oh, okay.
Cat Kruger.
Cat.
So two things that she's written this year that I've like, yeah, I got to run this one.
Yeah.
So I found that very interesting and very, Very cool. So I'll be running this one, I think. The other DM is running another one, and I haven't heard back from the third one yet. But so far, there's supposed to be tons of people showing up for it, so I hope we can actually fill tables and have multiple games going.
That would be nice. And,
yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, yeah, just bring more people into D&D. Or spread the love.
Hey guys, Chris here, hopping in the middle of the podcast to give you all of our announcements. Be sure to watch our live stream every Saturday at Twitch, twitch.tv/GrumpyDungeonMasters at 8 p.m. Make sure to visit our website, grumpydungeonmasters.com, and order yourself one of our gift packs of Grumpy Dungeon Master dice. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/GrumpyDungeonMasters, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at GrumpyDMs on Twitter. Be sure to check out our new buddies, Fate Awakens, on YouTube at youtube.com/FateAwakens. And also be sure to tune in every Friday at 4 p.m. when they release their new live play D&D session of their homebrew campaign. As always, be sure to check out Zenergy Gamers at zenergy-gamers.com. Use code WordGrumpy for 5% off any online order. Anything else to add, Jay?
Nope. Just over here dancing on TikTok.
All right.
Speaking of spreading the love, you love that transition, right?
Yeah.
you sent that little video to me earlier, Harry Potter and the Nuclear Fireball of Death, D&D 5e, and it's a 1 minute YouTube video that's a clip from fucking TikTok. So yeah, social media today is weird, man.
Yep.
But so the basic of it is that Glyph of Warding is broken. And Glyph of Warding, I'm not going to read the entirety of it, but it's when you cast Glyph of Warding, you can also cast a second spell to activate with a trigger that you set. So in the video, he basically sets it up where you cast Glyph of Warding and cast Fireball with it on a single page in a book. And I looked it up, man. There's nothing that says this won't work. So then you take that entire book and you cast Glyph of Warding on every single page in the book with Fireball attached to it.
Yep.
So then you set the trigger and it can literally be anything you want. And when Glyph of Warding goes off, it does one of two things. It either targets the person who triggered it as a individual spell, or it throws the area of effect. In Fireball's case, it would be area of effect, and the target, it'll center it on whoever triggered the effect.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do this, and this book is 200 pages, that's 200 fireballs going off at the exact same time. Yeah. And there's literally nothing in the rules that say you can't do this. Now that the weakness of it there, and there are some weaknesses of it. It costs 200 gold every time you cast Glyph of Warding, so it's not cheap. Obviously, a high level character, they're going to have the money to do that. Two, if you cast it on an object, that object cannot be moved more than 10 feet from where that Glyph of Warding was cast, or it breaks the warding. So you can't create this book and say the trigger is when I throw it at somebody. That's not going to work.
Okay.
But you could just set it in a room. I mean, you could just put it on a doorway. It doesn't even have to be on a book. You could, if you made a door frame out of, a mosaic, every single tile could have Glyph of Warding cast upon it. So when somebody comes within 10 feet, boom, kills everybody in the room. But I got to thinking about this. It doesn't just work with Fireball. It'll work with any spell. There's no spell level cap to this. So
Magic missile.
So why stop with just Fireball? Obviously, the simple way is to do the biggest damage spells. You could literally cast 200 meteor storms at the same damn time if you wanted. But that shit's boring. So I got to thinking, How would I kill everybody in the room? I'm not going to do a fireball because that's fucking boring. Let's see. A couple of the different ways I thought of. sorry if I'm laughing because this shit's just fucking hilarious to me. 200 Mordenkainen's Magnificent Mansions.
Just existing all of a sudden.
They all pop into existence in the exact same space. And of course, they're just going to basically, you know, it's this castle that just falls in on itself. And it fills the entire room, killing everybody.
Over and over again.
Yeah, 200 times. You could also do this with Summon Monster. So if you, and they actually do describe summoning in the Glyph of Warding. If you do a summon spell, it will summon the monsters directly next to the person who triggered it. So if you do summon monster and say it summons 8 creatures, but it does it 200 times, you now have a room completely full of creatures. Which, of course, everything in the room just suffocates and dies immediately. You know, it all gets crushed.
No, better yet, just make them all gelatinous cubes.
Sure, yeah, sure, that works. I mean, there's a lot of different summoning ones. I don't know if there is one that summons those, but, you know, especially if you look into Tasha's, you know, it has like 10 different summon spells in there. But getting even a little more ridiculous, I got thinking about Hero's Feast. Mm. Hero's Feast, you know, the one where you just eat the food and get buffs from it. But if you have 200, if you have 200 Heroes Feast going off at the same time, it's literally 200 tables worth of food all in one space.
Huh.
So you could kill everybody with turkey ham.
What is the
or Skyrim it and just kill them with cabbages.
Cabbages. My cabbages. What's the limit on the spell?
What do you mean?
Like, what spells can't I put into Glyph of Warding?
Any spell can go into it. It will say it targets you. If it's a spell that has to target you, I don't think it'll work. But this whole thing leaves a little bit open to DM. It doesn't always have an exact way it works. So a lot of these will be up to the DM as to how they work. And a couple of them I'm going to go over actually go into that. Okay. But Hero's Feast, I think, would be hilarious, just killing with cabbages. But my favorite one of the summoning spells would be to do it with Goodberry. You get a really big book, and rather than do it 200 times, you do 1,000 times. You know, you bring out like War and Peace or something like that, put 1,000 Goodberry spells in there and just kill them with Goodberries.
Okay. Yeah, that would be...
I mean, the whole thing is just fucking ridiculous. Let's see. What are some other fun ones? Legend Lore. This one wouldn't kill them, but this would just be a complete and utter mindfuck. If you cast Legend Lore 200 times on one person...
Okay.
Like, that's one, it's completely up to the DM how the hell this is going to work. Do you know what Legend Lore does?
Doesn't it, like, drop all knowledge of a certain thing into your brain?
Basically. So yeah. Name or describe a person, place, or object. That spell brings to your mind a brief summary of the significant lore about the thing you named. It might consist of current tales, forgotten stories, or even secret lore that has never been widely known. If the thing named isn't of legendary importance, you gain no information. The information you learn is inaccurate, but might be blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so you could literally hit them with 200 legend lore spells and just have this person learn everything about everything.
I mean, in Cthulhu terms, they just go insane.
Yeah, see, I would probably bust out the madness chart and just start fucking rolling.
Yeah, that would work.
That's how I would do it. Yeah.
So, Glyph of Warding, the spell is limited to 3rd level or lower.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
I read through this whole thing. Where the fuck does it say that? There it is. Yeah, I see it.
So, Mordenkainen's Castle wouldn't work. Because I was thinking, like...
Well, that ruins half of what I was going to discuss tonight, but I'm going over these anyway on the assumption that it works.
So, my first thought went straight to Plane Shift.
Yeah, I thought about that too, but Plane Shift, I think, says willing.
No, you can banish them.
That's banishment. That's not Plane Shift.
No, plane shift.
Plane shift. You end up to 8 willing creatures who link
in. You can use this spell to banish an unwilling creature to another place.
Okay, well, I didn't read the whole thing. I read the first fucking sentence.
You gotta get that third paragraph, man. It has all the good information.
I have like 15 spells on here. I wasn't reading everything about every one of them.
So, no. My question would be is like, if you cast 200 plane shifts at the same time, that would just break the planar system, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it overload everything and all of a sudden an astral just goes up and eat everything?
It wouldn't, because it would basically, because they're going to go off sort of in an order, you know, whoever's getting hit with them, and it would target whoever triggered it. So it's not going to get everybody, assuming it's an adventuring party. And mind you, I'm thinking of this from the perspective of a DM, not from a player doing this. But whoever gets hit with this, they're going to make their save, and they're going to make their save. But sooner or later, they're going to fail, and they're going to a random location. Yeah. And then the rest of the plane shift spells are just going to fail because they have no target. But it's absolutely guaranteeing that whoever gets, who triggers that glyph of warding, you're just going to a random plane somewhere.
And it doesn't say that your mage that made this book can't store spells with glyph of warding that are better than third level.
Let's see. Yeah, like it only allows up to third level, but that still sucks. There's still a few of them that I pulled up that would be kind of fun to play
with.
Bestow Curse is third level. Ooh. So when you hit people with a spell, you can't have basically multiple stacking of a spell, but this is where the DM ruling sort of comes in for spells like this. If you have multiple of the same spells, whatever's the most powerful will overwrite. But I think that was intended for buffs, not necessarily for other stuff. Bestow Curse is one of these spells that it does multiple effects. So you could choose one ability score while Curse the target has a disadvantage on ability checks and saving throws. Well, if you're doing it 200 times, just choose every stat multiple times. So all of their stats are going to be disadvantaged and minuses. You also would gain disadvantage on attack rolls. While the target is cursed, they must make a wisdom saving throw at the start of each turn. If it fails, they do nothing. And while they're cursed, your attacks and spells deal an extra 1d8 necrotic damage to the target. So you could literally just stack them with every single aspect of Bestow Curse. That's kind of rough. Now, the only weakness is it only lasts up to a minute. But still, just a fun one, I think, to play with.
Yeah, especially if you like target wisdom like 10 times first.
Well, it wouldn't give them the multiples to the wisdom, but they're still gonna fail it, and their wisdom's gonna be shit. And then
as soon as you make them fail one wisdom, all the other are just gonna just fall right into place.
Yeah, definitely. let's see. I'm looking up some of these other ones I had talked about. It won't work because it's fifth level, but Contagion was another one exactly like that. You could hit them with blinding sickness, filth fever, flesh rot, mind fire, seizure, and slimy doom all at the same time.
Nice.
Let's see, what other fun ones did I have? Sending. You know what sending does, right?
Yes, that would also drive you insane.
Yeah, that was my thought on this. You hit them with 200 messages all at the same time of 25 words each. And their brain has to comprehend all that somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's definitely a roll on the madness table, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely is. Especially if it's like, you know, if you basically put all the knowledge you can as you can into that, like max out all the sendings and just have them go crazy with it.
Let's see. There were a couple of other ones that won't work because of the level cap that you pointed out to me. Rightly so, but symbol would have been a fun one, because that's another one where you could hit with different effects of fear, hopelessness, insanity, pain, sleep, and stunning. And death and discord. I forgot about those two. Like that's just rude. One of my favorite ones I had thought about was contingency with reverse gravity. Do you know how contingency works?
No.
So basically, you cast it on yourself, and when certain effects, it basically allows you to set a trigger to automatically cast a spell with the effects. So if you did contingencies, and every time you do contingency, you did reverse gravity. And this may or may not work. It's utter bullshit. This is me theorizing. So you could set the trigger for contingency is when the glyph warding goes off. So then the contingency will automatically cast the first reverse gravity. And you set all the other contingencies to then cast reverse gravity again 6 seconds later in the opposite direction. So you set up this infinite loop of reverse gravity throwing everybody to the ceiling, and then reverse gravity throwing everybody to the ground, and then back to the ceiling, and then back to the ground.
Oh, that's horrible.
Let's see. There was Geass. And this was one of my favorite ones. You know how Geass works, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The basics of it are that you place a magical command on a creature that you can see within range, forcing it to carry out some service or refrain from some action or course of activity as you decide. And basically, if they don't do exactly what the Geass is telling them, they take 5d10 damage. Geass lasts for 30 days. So you hit these people with 200 Geass spells. And at that point, you could say, you need to go to the store and buy me a donut. Then you need to walk to the other city on the other, you know, on the other continent. Basically, you just set them up this obscene amount of orders that they have to follow for 30 straight days. The one caveat is you cannot give them an issue that would result in certain death, but you could literally just screw their entire lives up for 30 straight days.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I like that. I read that one. I was like, man, that would be the most fun thing ever. Let me dig up Asha's for the last one that I had come up on. Let's see. It was called Sword Burst.
Okay.
So Sword Burst. It's instantaneous. So you create a momentary circle of spectral blades that sweep around you. All other creatures within 5 feet of you must succeed on a dex save or take 1d6 force damage. So if they're walking together in a group and they become the target of Sword Burst, it literally casts Sword Burst and hits everyone around them. So the person who triggered the effect will be perfectly fucking fine, but the rest of their party is just fucked.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, could you imagine that, walking in, oh, there's a book on the ground, and you trigger it, and next thing you know, blades just murder every single person next to you? Like, you're just covered in ichor and blood from what used to be your friends? I'd say that requires a madness roll as well.
I've been doing a lot of madness rolls in my last couple campaigns. I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I kind of like the madness stuff. I haven't used them in my current campaign, but there's nothing saying I wouldn't. But anyway, that was sort of the nonsense spells that I walked through. I still love the idea of just killing everyone in the room with cabbages.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the best one overall.
Yeah, it's definitely my favorite, just because it harkens back to Skyrim.
Yeah, well, and Avatar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And my cabbages! That poor guy.
Yeah. Well, he eventually made a huge industry out of...
That is true, yeah. Yeah, he did. That was in the sequel, yeah.
So another thing I kind of was messing around with is... Usually I spend Sundays, which is when we record the podcast, just relaxing and hanging out with the family and, you know, doing family time. And then when everyone goes down, we record the podcast. I write D&D stuff. But I was flipping through YouTube Shorts, which is pretty much just TikTok on YouTube. And that's when I sent you that thing that we just
talked about. Of which I watch maybe half of the ones that you guys send. Oddly enough, I did watch those two today.
Yeah.
The Better Initiative one, which that one's just weird.
The Better Initiative one, okay, I really like that. And just to to stop my topic and kind of talk about that one, since you just brought it up and reminded me about it. Essentially, what he does is, at the beginning of the game, when they start, he has them roll initiative. Okay? And so he has their initiative. So as they're doing stuff out in the world, they're working off initiative order. Okay? So if someone goes like, okay, can I try to do this? Okay, cool. Well, that's where initiative starts now.
And that's the weird part where I feel the whole thing sort of falls apart.
Well, so when someone is doing something and like it's their turn and they're like, okay, I want to open the door, and they open a door and there's like a monster on the other side, you know, you don't get that one player that immediately goes up and goes, oh, I want to attack it, and kind of like jumps it and starts the combat. Now there's going to be a couple turns maybe before that guy gets to just do his random attack. So maybe the person opened the door, gets it, converse with the person, and then the next person down on that initiative order converses as well, and gives you an opportunity to maybe not just have every encounter be fighting.
My concern with the whole doing it that way is that everything will then require initiative.
Everything will require initiative.
It's going to bog the game down, so what it's going to do.
It wouldn't bog my game down, because I, with D&D Beyond, I can always have people's initiative there and ready to go. That's never been a problem. And then I auto-roll all the initiatives for all the monsters, and everything's fine. I don't think it would bog down my normal game either, like at the table, because I just have their little counters, okay, always up, you know? So it's always there. And then at the end of combat, initiative is rolled again for the until the next combat session happens. I don't know. I liked it a lot. It does fix the problem with the fast people are always going the fat first, and the stops of people going, I want to attack something, and just leading everything to be combat encounters.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thought.
It's an interesting concept. I'm sure it works for this guy and his table. I think there's a lot of tables it's just not going to work for.
Maybe.
But anyway, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I'm going to try it out sometime for sure. Maybe my Strahd game. Who knows?
Who knows?
The other thing I found while I was kind of going along, and this really isn't D&D related, but, you know, we're at the end of the podcast hour, so I can talk about weird things. It is called the Library of Babel. It's a website. Okay. This website basically does one thing. It collects all knowledge in the universe that ever has been, will be, or can be. You know the saying, you know, throw enough monkeys in a room full of typewriters, eventually one of them will type out the works of Shakespeare?
Sure. I guess if you were going to summon up monkeys with a glyph of warding spell and you had enough of them, sure. All right.
So this website essentially creates that. Okay? So it basically has assembled every character and special character. And basically randomly generated it in almost every possible known configuration. Okay? So the phrase, for example, Al Campaign created by Christopher Waples actually appears in the text in this library. Okay?
Okay.
The phrase, let's just say...
Dungeon Masters.
Well, let's just say Elf Fomorian... with Bodok stats. Okay? And I hit search in this library. There's an exact match in volume title VMKKZ page 51. And when I go to look at it, you know, it's right there in the middle of this random text thing, Elfamorian with Bodok stats. So it's essentially this website that, like, the cure for cancer theoretically is in this massive text in one of the volumes on one of the walls, that you kind of have to GUI interface your way through. The cure for cancer is in here someplace. You just have to find it first. You know?
All right.
It kind of goes back to our conversations of like original ideas. Whatever original idea you could write down on paper already exists in this Library of Babel website. So did you create it?
I'm on the website right now, and yeah, like, I don't even understand this, man. It's so just, it's
so
weird.
You have to pick a seed. Okay. So if like you choose browse, then you pick a hex name. And there's infinite hex names. So let's just type in J as the hex name. All right. Okay. Then you're brought to this library that has four walls that you can click on.
All right. Yep. I see that.
When you click on one of those walls, you're now given a bookshelf with five shelves. So let's choose the bottom bookshelf. And then you get a set of volumes. I think there's like 20. And then when you click on that volume, and as you go through the 410 pages of that volume, they're all just random characters.
Yes.
But if you look hard enough, you can find phrases and stuff in these volumes. So it's really kind of crazy.
Yeah, like, it's gibberish that might put together sentences.
Will put together sentences.
Yeah, okay, I'm sure it will, because there's enough of it.
Yes. Give me a random idea that's never been.
You could seriously, if you just took every letter in the English alphabet and randomly generate it, you know, if it randomly generates enough, it's going to have every single possible phrase sooner or later.
Yes, that is the intention of this website.
Yeah, I don't know that that's useful though.
This is not like something you can like use to basically find.
Yeah, right. You can't find anything in this.
This is more of a thought experiment than it is anything else.
Okay.
So it's really more like give me a new thing that you're just about to create off the top of your head.
Why you gotta ask me that, man?
Because I just something.
I don't know. Golem writes gibberish.
Writes gibberish. All right. So there is an exact match.
Of course,
multiple
there is.
Times. Volume. N A Q V K D B T W A I C page 101.
But if you type in the search the words cure for cancer, you're going to find the words cure for cancer, but you're not actually going to find the cure for cancer.
No, when you find the cure for cancer, whatever that, whatever they call when they have a formula, you know, you type it all out, and you have that formula that is the cure, from a medical standpoint. You type that into this thing, and it's going to show up someplace.
I don't doubt that, but it, once again, it's just a randomly generated mass amount of text.
Yeah.
It sounds like it uses up more energy than it's worth, in my opinion.
But it just goes down to, it's almost a philosophical question. Yeah. If you create something brand new, like that does not exist in any capacity whatsoever right now, and then you were to come to this website, this libraryofbabel.info, and type that thing into this, and it pops up in its search field as an exact match on a certain volume, room, bookshelf, volume, and page.
A randomly generated text.
Yes.
The answer is yes, because whatever randomly generated text you find, there was no thought process behind that. It was just putting letters together.
Well, that's the thought process. The thought process was created.
No. That is an algorithm randomly generating text. There's no thought process of that, of whatever the project is, of whatever creation you've come up with.
Yep.
You know, well, if I create a brand new tabletop with a new system altogether, and I name it, you know, I don't know, if I just name it Dragons and Dungeons, and I type in Dragons and Dungeons, and that pops up, you know, it doesn't mean that somebody else created it before me. It just means that this random algorithm put those letters in that order.
Yeah. By the way, Dragons and Dungeons.
Probably a thing, I'm sure, yeah. My brain couldn't think of anything else. We've already determined that's not happening tonight.
Is on volume 18, shelf 4, wall 3, of hexagon, massive number.
I hope the government didn't fund this because I want my money back.
No, I think it's just some guy decided to create it.
Okay,
and kind of like,
that's fine. Hey, he's
take that, like you said, that old statement of monkeys in a room with typewriters, and and recreate it, and definitely recreated it. I mean, it's weird. It's creepy.
Yeah, well, it's not for me. I have no use for it.
Well, I don't know. But yeah, I think it's all we have for today. I do want to mention that yesterday's stream was 1 year of streaming on Twitch.
Nice.
We're doing pretty good. I mean, we average around like 10 viewers no matter what stream we're doing.
Yeah, the Tuesday nights have actually been getting a decent amount.
Yep.
People like watching us play video games and dying a lot.
Yeah, they do. So, I'm just putting out the call, like, for all those out there who, you know, want to watch our stuff, you know, we're throwing it up on YouTube now to kind of watch it. And, you know, we'd like to have you guys show up and watch us play games and talk about D&D. Yeah.
We'll talk to you. One last thing before going, I forgot to write this one down in the spell list, but tsunami. since we both love that spell so much, if you could do that with a glyph of warding 200 times.
Oh, that'd be mean.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
That would flood the world.
Yeah, I mean, why stop at 200? Just one asshole wizard doing it a million times. That's his whole life. Oh, even better, he becomes a lich. Just from, you know, from the point he is able to cast tsunami and glyph of warding, just bam, from that point on, you know, 300 years into the future, and that's his master plan, is to flood the world with tsunami.
Better yet, someone happens to come across a scroll of summon terror asks.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Copies it.
Why stop at one?
400 times into a glyph of warding. And then leaves it as a book in the middle of a room. And the trigger is, surprise, it's Godzilla! And, yep.
Yep. I like this plan.
Yeah.
So, for D&D, since you guys are making some changes for 5.5, how about getting rid of that level cap on Glyph of Warding? How about you be able to cast it as a 9th level Glyph of Warding with any spells in it?
I still think it's 6th edition.
Bye, Craig.
So long. The grumpiness has been your friend. Now go and spread anger through D&D. No, don't do that. Be happy, be friendly, be awesome. But maintain the boiling hate that inside your heart. I don't know, buddy. I'm rambling at this point. Shut me up and end this podcast.